She told her dad that she was just fed up, that all the problems of life were piling up on her, and she was just tired of all of the hassles. "I'm tired of struggling," she told him. Her dad, who was a chef, took her into his kitchen and sat her down, and in silence, she watched as he brought out three identical pots, put water in them, and set them on the fire to boil. As they were coming to a boil, he put carrots in the first pot, he put eggs in the second pot, and he put coffee grounds in the third pot. And literally, they sat there in silence and watched the water boil. Finally, he took out the ingredients, and he asked his daughter to check them out. First, she took the carrots, and they were soft and pliable. Then she took one of the eggs and peeled off the shell and cut it up in slices. And then she took a cup of coffee out of the third pot and drank it and said it was very good. It was then that her dad explained. He said the carrots went in stiff and brittle and came out soft and pliable. That the eggs went into the boiling water as liquid covered with a fragile shell, but came out as hard-boiled and could be cut up in pieces. And that the coffee grounds were very different from the other two, because while the water changed the other two, it was the coffee grounds that changed the water. And he said to her, "That is what adversity in life is like. It can change you for the better. Or you can change the adversity into something completely different." King David was in boiling hot water that day when he called for the evacuation of the city of Jerusalem. His own son, Prince Absalom, had brought an army that was marching on Jerusalem with the intent probably to kill his father, the king, to seize the government and the throne, and to take over the city and the nation of Israel. And so as David and his fellow Jerusalemites escaped to the desert, there was a wonderful and awful mix of blessings and of curses. A guy named Ziba approached David with a supply of gifts that would make any birthday memorable. If you got for your birthday what he brought to David, you would never, ever forget that birthday. Ziba was the chief of staff for Mephibosheth. He had actually been the chief of staff for the grandfather, who was King Saul. And maybe you remember the story of Mephibosheth. Both his father and his grandfather died when he was 5 years old. They died in a terrible battle that Israel fought against the Philistines. And his nanny thought that he would be killed as well, since it was an ancient practice to spill all royal blood and kill all possible successors. So she ran with him and she dropped him. And the 5-year-old was crippled then for the rest of his life. When peace came to the country, he lived in a little town in the far northeast in poverty and in obscurity until King David rescued him, brought him to the capital city, gave him land and money and businesses and servants and a seat at the royal court in Jerusalem. In 2 Samuel 16, when David had gone a short distance beyond the summit of the Mount of Olives, there was Ziba, the steward of Mephibosheth, waiting to meet him. He had a string of donkeys saddled and loaded with 200 loaves of bread, 100 cakes of raisins, 100 cakes of figs, and a skin of wine. The king asked Ziba, "Why have you brought these?" Ziba answered, "The donkeys are for the king's household to ride on. Bread and fruit are for the men to eat, and the wine is to refresh those who become exhausted in the desert." The king then asked, "Where is your master's grandson?" Ziba said to him, "Oh, he's staying in Jerusalem, because he thinks today the house of Israel will give me back my grandfather's kingdom." Then the king said to Ziba, all that belongs to Mephibosheth is now yours. I humbly bow, Ziba said. May I find favor in your eyes, my lord the king. So let's make a comparison. Can you remember the most terrible, awful, crummy, lousy day you've had in the last 6 to 12 months? You were discouraged and down and just felt hopeless. And then somebody showed up at your door with 4 gallons of your favorite caribou coffee for you to drink, and 80 gallons of your favorite ice cream, and 100 dozen of your favorite cookies. And in addition to that, 50 hot pizzas just for you, fresh from Domino's, and $1,000 worth of McDonald's gift cards. So you're feeling better. And this is kind of good news. You probably wouldn't know what to do with all those gifts. But if you got to thinking about it, you'd think this is probably better, for me at least, than the gifts that Ziba brought. Because what if somebody knocked at my door and brought me a string of donkeys? Especially if you live in an apartment. What do you do with all those donkeys? And 100 loaves of bread and 100 cakes of raisins and 100 cakes of figs and a skin of wine? So maybe Ziba wasn't the typical shopper, and maybe the list of gifts that he brought for David don't seem very current or relevant to us. But maybe also what mattered most was here was someone that cared. When the king was down, when the day was awful, when everything was caving in, to have a friend, to have someone who empathized, to have someone who went out of his way to bring gifts and to show generosity. And this was really nice, what Ziba did for David. And then David asked about Ziba's boss, Mephibosheth, asked how he was doing and what he was doing. And Ziba gave a most troubling report. He said that pretty much everybody is on your orders evacuating out of the city of Jerusalem, but Mephibosheth is not. He's just staying there. Because he's assuming that in all this political and civil turmoil, the result will be that he will get the kingdom of his father and grandfather and that he will be seated on the throne. Now, it's not very hard to imagine what probably went through David's mind. He's thinking, Mephibosheth, he was as good as dead. Any of the other kings in neighboring kingdoms would have killed him if he was a descendant of the previous monarch. So he's in this little town and a poor man and disabled. And I am the one who reached out to him. I gave him a place to live, a seat at the royal table. I gave him money and servants and businesses and all of his grandfather's land. I did all of this. And look at him, this ingrate. This guy for whom I have been so generous, and now he's returning by refusing my order and claiming my throne. You begin to wonder, isn't there no one left who is decent anymore? Besides, it can really hurt when you go out of your way to be generous to someone and then feel betrayed by that person. And so David turns to Ziba and issues an executive order. He says, everything that I gave to Mephibosheth is yours. And in an instant, Mephibosheth, by royal edict, was returned to poverty. And Ziba, who was a civil servant, in that moment became an instant multimillionaire and celebrity. So it's a cool story, I think. Cool story. David is encouraged. Mephibosheth is punished. Ziba is rewarded. No wonder he bowed down and was humbly grateful to David. It's just a really cool story. Except Ziba was lying. What he said wasn't true at all. Mephibosheth wasn't claiming the throne. Mephibosheth was disabled. He was physically unable to walk out of the city with everybody else. And it was because of his disability that he stayed behind, not because of his disloyalty. And David, in this terrible, awful, lousy day, so discouraged, just believed what he was told. Just took the rumor at face value and accepted it. And hastily responded and gave an order that was totally inconsistent with what was right. Ziba shouldn't have been rewarded. Ziba should have been punished. Okay, so I'm glad that David feels better on this day that he was so down. But I'm sorry that he so easily believed a lie. And there are good lessons there for us because we all need encouragement. We all need encouragement in order to deal with the hassles and problems and stresses of life. We need those who will give us some kind of good news and some kind of gift and so show us some kind of friendship. So yeah, we need that, just as David needed it. But we need to be cautious that we do not easily believe the worst that we hear about other people. David's lousy, rotten, miserable day got a little bit better when he got a string of donkeys and all of these gifts that were given to him. But then it got a whole lot worse because of a critic named Shimei. Now, all leaders have critics. All leaders. There's no exception to that. If somebody is in a leadership position, particularly in politics, there are always going to be people that disagree, and David was no exception. Some critics are kind and reasonable and respectful. And then there are other critics who are just like totally out of control. If Shimei were here today, I try to imagine what he would look like and what he would behave like. And I think he would be like the guy that was on television this past week as sort of an out of control baseball coach.
Now he's going to kick dirt on home plate. Harry Robinson now gesturing, showing exactly what he believes happened. Now he's going to spread some dirt. He's going to cover up home plate. G-Rob getting the lamb in, now kicks him over at umpire Roberto Ortiz. And he is now going to run down the first base line. Is he going to try to take first base out? Yes, he is. He's picked it up. I think he's going to toss it out. No, he's going to take it with him. He's going to say, this is my base. I'm carrying it with me. Or is he going to give it? He's going to sign it, and he's going to give it to a fan. He's signing first base. Presenting it to the front row or second row. There we go. There's a souvenir for you.
As King David approached Baharim, a man from the same clan as Saul's family came out from there. His name was Shimei, the son of Gera, and he cursed as he came out. He pelted David and all the king's officials with stones, though all the troops and the special guards were on David's right and left. As he cursed, Shimei said, get out, you man of blood, you scoundrel. The Lord has repaid you for all the blood you shed in the household of Saul, in whose place you have reigned. The Lord has handed the kingdom over to your son Absalom. You have come to ruin because you are a man of blood. So Shimei could have been an out-of-control baseball coach today, but he was an out-of-control political critic 3,000 years ago. And I don't really know whether he should be classified as funny or sad. Because, like in every generation, he was one of those, thankfully, few who was so angry and upset with the political leader that he went ballistic. Shimei actually showed up cursing. So when they first saw him and heard him, he's already cursing, which means that he was doing it when he was alone. So there he is out in the desert yelling and shouting curses against David when there was no one there to hear him. Now, most of the time when people do that, it's because they have a weak position and they think that they can somehow strengthen and bolster what they are saying by using obscenities or profanity. Shimei was a relative of some sort to the former king Saul, And he assumed that David had illegitimately taken the throne and that it really belonged back to King Saul. And that's what he wanted. He wanted yesterday to come back again. Probably he wanted King Saul on the throne again, even though that was impossible because King Saul was dead. I've got to hand it to him. He wasn't afraid. This guy is shouting curses and he's throwing rocks and dirt at David when he's surrounded by the army. He's got the equivalent of the Secret Service standing around him. And this guy is undaunted and unstoppable because he really believed it, and he was a true zealot. He called David names, which, again, is usually a pretty sure sign of weakness. When we have a view and we think that it somehow is not going to be understood or listened to, then we tend to raise the volume and shout, and we tend to call names. And that's what he did. He called David a scoundrel. He did what a lot of people do. He claimed that God was on his side. Now, he didn't much get the facts straight, actually. If he's referring to David sitting in the place of King Saul, that just wasn't technically accurate because David never took the capital city or the palace or the throne of King Saul. He established a new capital in Jerusalem and sat on a new throne. And as far as Shimei's assertion that Absalom had already taken over the kingdom and was the new king, it wasn't true. It's what Absalom wanted to do, but he never actually was able to accomplish it. And as far as God giving up on David and being through with him, God was not through with David. So he had pretty much all of the facts wrong here, but he had deep emotion. And deep emotion was for him more important than factual accuracy. Now, we all run into the modern successors of Shimei. They are those who sit in the next cubicle at the office. There may be a Shimei in the family who showed up this past summer for the family reunion and will be back next July, Shimei will, for the next family reunion. These are the people who can cause problems if the neighborhood. So the old neighborhood block party has fewer attending because Shimei might come. And what do we do with these people? How do we respond to them? Well, then Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, said to the king, "Why should this dead dog," now he's calling names on the guy that calls names, "why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over and cut off his head." Well, that's one way of dealing with people that criticize you. You know, just cut off their heads. Seldom do they criticize after that. And David could have done this. He could have ordered the execution of Shimei. You know, just because David could have doesn't mean that he should have. Sonia Reeder tells her story in a Christian magazine. She and her son, Chase, sat down at the dining room table just before Valentine's Day, and he was writing Valentine's cards to his second grade classmates. His mom offered to help so that he would sign the cards or write on them, and she would stuff them into the envelopes for distribution in the class the next day. And as she's putting them into the envelopes, she came across a Valentine card that had pre-printed on it, "I am thankful for you," with big black lines crossing out "thankful." And she said to her son, "Well, I don't think it would be kind to give this card to one of your friends." And that's when she saw another side of the story of her second grader. With a burst of emotion, he yelled. He said, "Every day that girl calls me names, and I have asked her to stop, and she just laughs and curses at me." And his mom's heart just sank. She could just picture sending her 7-year-old off to school and being cornered in the playground where this bully would yell at him and shout him and call him names and wound her son's spirit. And it was all she could do to fight back the tears. She put her arms around her son, but he pulled away from her. He said, "She embarrasses me. Do you want me to just go stand there and let her call me names?" I don't know if you remember when you were in second grade or junior high or high school, and there was some bully on the bus or at the recess or in the biology lab who would just constantly harass you and embarrass you and crush your spirit so that you had trouble going to sleep at night and trouble getting up to go to school in the morning. Maybe you remember what it was like, what Chase experienced. His mom put her arms around him and answered his question. She said, "Yes, Chase, I do want you to let her call you names. I don't want you to do anything that would hurt her." So a few minutes later, that her second grade son picked up a new Valentine card, signed it, and addressed it to the girl who bullied him every day on the playground. And that was the day that Chase chose forgiveness over revenge. But the king said, "What do you and I have in common, you sons of Zariah? If he is cursing because the Lord said to him, 'Curse David,' who can ask, 'Why do you do this?'" David then said to Abishai and all his officials, "My son, who is of my own flesh, is trying to take my life. How much more than this Benjamite? Leave him alone. Let him curse, for the Lord has told him to. It may be that the Lord will see my distress and repay me with good for the cursing I am receiving today." And David showed a spiritual and a political humility and maturity that is simply amazing. He recognized that his critic was out of control, and he wasn't going to have him killed for being out of control. In fact, if anything, David was more critical of those who wanted to kill this guy than he was of the critic himself. But David was wonderfully humble. He knew these criticisms weren't true. He knew that the facts were skewed. And yet, he wanted to find God even in the criticism. He was saying, "What if Shimei has somehow been licensed by God to say what he is saying? And I must learn what God has for me to learn, and that God may use this for good." Would that we could all do that. When we are under attack from the people in the next cubicle or at the family reunion or around the neighborhood, when someone's yelling and cursing, that our response is, "What can I learn from God through this difficult experience?" So what if this story were written into a stage play and you were part of a community theater group and you were going to be cast? Which is the role that would sort of best fit you? Do you see yourself as someone who likes to be on the attack, who likes to grab the information and take the initiative and then go after the person in leadership? Is that you? Because if it is, then you get to play Shimei. Or maybe you like to shut down people that disagree, the critics, those that speak with too high a volume and too direct a confrontation, and you just want to shut them down and cut them off. Then you get to play the part of Abishai. Or do you listen to the critic and feel the pain and pray that God will somehow use this for good? And then you get to play the part of David. David was humble and gracious towards Shimei. But that didn't silence him. So David and his men continued along the road while Shimei was going along the hillside opposite him, cursing as he went and throwing stones at him and showering him with dirt. The king and all the people with him arrived at their destination exhausted. And there he refreshed himself, because there are some Shimeis who just will not quit. You can threaten them and you can sweet talk them, and they keep coming out with more curses and more stones and keep throwing more dirt. And it is no wonder that at the end of that day, David and all of his colleagues were just exhausted, because constant harping wears us down. It wears us down in a marriage. It wears us down in a family. It wears us down at work. It wears us down at school. It wears us down in leadership. And so they needed to be refreshed. Now, perhaps we are prone to say, you know, it's a nice utopian theory. It just isn't very practical. To treat people like Shimei with kindness and respect and let them get away with it, that's just not very practical. But it is Christian. So listen to what the New Testament has to say. In James 1:19, my dear brothers, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. For man's anger does not bring about the righteous life that God desires. In 1 Corinthians 4:12 and 13, when we are cursed as Christians, we bless. When we are persecuted, we endure it. When we are slandered, we answer kindly. In 1 Peter 2:23 and 24, when they hurled their insults at Jesus, he did not retaliate. When he suffered, he made no threats. Instead, he entrusted himself to him who judges justly. He himself bore our sins in his body on the tree, so that we might die to sins and live for righteousness. It is by his wounds that you have been healed. So, does this biblical approach actually work when dealing with out-of-control people? Well, it does. Sometimes it does. But as Christians, the final test for us is not whether it works. The final test is whether this is what God calls upon us to do. All right, so what about Shimei? This guy out of control, throwing rocks and dirt and yelling curses and just won't stop. If you page ahead three chapters in the Old Testament book of 2 Samuel, to chapter 19, you read more of the story. That when Shimei, the son of Gera, crossed the Jordan, he fell prostrate before the king and said to him, "May my Lord not hold me guilty. Do not remember how your servant did wrong on the day my Lord the king left Jerusalem. May the king put it out of his mind, for I, your servant, know that I have sinned. But today I have come here as the first of the whole house of Joseph to come down and meet my Lord the king." So yes, a righteous and biblical response to misbehavior can become the catalyst of God, even to convert the critic. Usually at the end of a sermon, what I do is pray my prayer. But I want to give you a different prayer today, a prayer that comes from a Serbian bishop named Nikolai Velimirovic. He's been gone a long time now. In the 1940s, he spoke the words that you will in a moment hear in a prayer as he was being arrested by the Nazis and taken to the Dachau concentration camp. Bishop Nikolai prayed, "Bless my enemies, O Lord. Even I bless them and do not curse them. Enemies have driven me into your embrace more than friends have. Friends have bound me to earth. Enemies have loosed me from earth and have demolished my aspiration in the world. Bless my enemies, O Lord. Even I bless and do not curse them."